Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 322, continuing our pockets of ADP breakdowns, pocket part two, ADP 100 through 150 tonight. We'll get some news and notes, some listener questions, and much, much more. But before we get to that, you can follow me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bluefield. How are we doing, my friend?
We're good, dude. 1 month from tonight, we will be clanking glasses in Las Vegas. Yes, one night from tonight, I will be doing my Listener League auction with you, which will be a ton of fun on Friday evening, 9 Eastern. Spring training starts tomorrow, so news will be coming in hot and heavy. Things are good, man. Things are very good. How are you doing?
Doing well. The week is passing by. It's like we're going to have a break from the rain here. I know people don't care about that where it's been snowing forever, but it's been a little rough around here for our standards for the last like 4 days. Now it's going to be freezing with the rain. It's going to be good. It's going to be fun.
But it enables you to record more. So,
yes, which
and I've you done. Did. You did finish. You finished your all 30 team previews, right?
Yep, the last one drops on Friday. Last one drops on Friday, the 30th and final team, the Los Angeles Dodgers, drops on
Best
Friday.
For last. So, yeah,
that's what some say, not me, but that's what some will say. And so that is done. We had a new John Legeza show. We got the Bubba and the Bloom show stream for the auction. Yeah, all kinds of stuff. It's been a good time. But that's done. Back to reality around here. And things are good other than that. Looking forward to streaming with you tomorrow night without a care in my world. Just getting to sit back, enjoy the ride.
What are we doing for Friday Night Lights? Are we bringing beverages? Are we just, is it Celsius? What's the plan?
At this point,
depends on how Friday goes.
At this point in time, I'm actually thinking just keeping it simple. I kind of just want to be able to wake up Saturday and not worry about a whole lot. But we'll see. We'll see how Friday goes. Friday might turn me into wanting to bring about a 12-pack of high noons in, and we'll see where it goes. So
I had a couple noons for yours. So, but I did not show up until the end. It was after my kids were down. So shout out to Martin Sikulski and Ben for really sticking through the majority of your stream. I had to come in at the end and screw you up. So that was my job. I feel like I inadvertently accomplished that. So
it's all good. In the heat of the moment, I was furious, but that's just more so because I've been doing it for 4.5 hours, basically, and I was just the accumulation of everything involved.
Let's just say Anthony Santander is the new Miguel Amaya.
Yes, and he was not supposed to be on the team.
You don't.
Exactly. But that'll be taken care of first fab run of the season very quickly.
Oh, I'm sure I will screw something up royally tomorrow.
Oh, we'll see.
Don't know what it'll be, but it'll be something.
Yep, but we got Ryan tomorrow night, and then the next five or next week streaming each and every one of them. We'll keep you posted on that. We'll post links to Twitter, to Discords, all that stuff. But it'll be a doozy. A lot of fun coming your way to wrap up the listener leagues and really crank up Fab season. Other than that, let's get into some news and notes, Ryan. Nothing too crazy this episode compared to recent ones, but wanted to update. We had Edwin Yuseta of the Tampa Bay Rays was already dealing with a shoulder injury. He tried to throw on, I believe it was Thursday morning, didn't last long with a cranky shoulder, had to leave, and now he's officially going to see a doctor about this, which opens the door for one Griffin Jackson, maybe Clevinger, but Clevinger's on the trade block. So what's your thoughts on how this could play out?
Right. Obviously not great for Yuseta. We will see how that turns out. I don't know if it, we don't know if it's Jack still. Like I almost wonder for like last round reserve picks or whatever, if you try a Garrett Clevinger, Brian Baker, just on the possibility that this is still a committee now without Edwin Yuseta. I do think Griffin Jacks, his ADP should go earlier now. He should be more expensive in drafts, but I don't think it's a given that just because Yuseta isn't there that Jax is. We don't know yet is kind of what I'm saying there. So I think a kind of a sly move could be scooping up a cheap Clevinger or Brian Baker right now, because both are pretty decently skilled. Like you said, Clevinger maybe could get traded, but I don't know. That seems like a decent move. Hedge to make, and if it doesn't work out, you lose nothing by doing that.
Yeah, if you want to go deep reserves or draft and hold style. You can go a little biggie. Can't you see? Hunter Biggie is also a guy I've always liked with closing skills. God,
you liked him like
he's nasty. He's nasty, just can't stay healthy. But on the Clevinger front, I was checking some things out. I mean, we talked about it before with Tampa Bay. Jason Collette has mentioned it, that Tampa Bay, they always seem to have a committee, but they stick to a closer for the most part there. So I still think it's Jax with Clevinger getting a few saves in the mix while he's there. I think they want to use him more higher leverage situations with his filth. Yep. That's where my brain goes. And so just for conversation point, we were having in the Discord, like right now, over the last 7 days in OCs, our 12-team fab on the NFBC, Jax is roughly going around pick 200. And I feel like if we know he's the closer, the primary closer, that he feels going to get 70% plus of the saves, to me, he goes in the Dennis Santana tier of things. That's where I would have him. I think he's that filthy. But it'll be interesting. Scott Burks in the chat said he took Jax at 155 and an NFBC 50. That's his new min for February. I think if he is the closer, he's that good.
Yeah, and that could actually be, if this is a capital C closer type deal, I could see Jax being a top 10 closer. I know I'm kind of talking outside of both ends here, but it just all depends on the role. But yeah, Jax is that good. He's never really had the chance to settle into the ninth throughout his career, and if he does now, yeah, like Burke's got him at 155, he said. The min in the 12-team fab leagues on NFBC is 157 last couple of days, so I could see him going that high if he's the guy.
Yep, so something to keep in mind if you are drafting. Things are shifting, and I know I have a draft on Saturday, so we'll see how that plays out as well. Spencer Schwellenbach had his surgery for his loose bodies in his arm, and when we talked last week, or last episode, Hurston Waldrop was going to see a Dr. Ryan. I remember when I told you they had a timetable, and I'm like, we're going to get an announcement that the Braves say he's going to have surgery, and the next day they said he's having surgery. Yeah, Hurston Waldrop's set to have surgery beginning of next week. He's on the 60-day IL.
Yep, this is the final nail in the coffin. We can drop and move on, or if you're in draft and holds, hope for something in the last 2 months of the season for some of these guys, because you can't really drop people in draft and holds. But do not draft either one, of course.
I just want to let people know Lawrence Butler is going to have a slow start to spring training and be held out of games for the first couple weeks, it says, of spring training as he continues to rehab back from his off-season knee surgery. The A's are saying he'll be ready for opening day, but just the fact he's not ready for the start of spring. I know they're playing it cautious, but I still need to see him play now.
Yeah, it doesn't affect too much, but just, you know, as we kind of switch into this, this is actually a big kind of turning point in draft season, right? As we've been, you know, a lot of the listeners to this show, and I know, you know, listenership has picked up, right, in the last few weeks as football's been over, whatever, but a lot of us who have been drafting since November are so set in stone that this is the ADP, this is the order of players. It's now a new game, and that game is, you know, what is news, what is noise in spring training, and being able to adapt to really playing time on the hitter side and on the pitcher side. If you're seeing new pitches, velocity changes, whatever, you know, don't be totally stuck in the mindset that you have been in the last couple of months drafting this offseason, because a lot's going to start changing in spring training. Some of it's actionable, some of it's not. That's the tricky part of spring training. But this is that. I mean, Lawrence Butler is a decent example of that. That's kind of why I'm going off on this side thing here. Is like, I'm not super worried about Butler, but the longer he does not appear in spring training games, start to worry a little bit more. So kind of obviously have to wait and see, but for now it doesn't bother me too much. But we still have, you know, what, 5-6 weeks till opening day, 5 weeks, so there is time for some of these minor nicks. And I'm not saying this is minor, but like, we tend to overreact to all this kind of minor stuff early in spring training. There's still a lot of time for these guys to get good and be good. So parse the news with precision like Bubba does on his news and notes that he posts on the Patreon.
I just blame Dr. Dave for making me cynical now whenever I see any type of medical diagnosis. On the notes, I just kept this simple. Jordan Westberg is broken. That's just all I'm going to say. He's broken. Yeah. He's physically unable to practice, they said.
He's physically unable to
He's on the PUP list. I didn't know baseball had one.
Yeah, no, it really sucks. Don't really understand. I feel like there's missing information here. From what we know, Westbrook just woke up one day and his oblique was all messed up. And then apparently his elbow might be too. There's, as we record, there's apparently some announcement coming about another injury, which may be the elbow. Who knows? Really sucks for Jordan Westbrook. Someone in the Discord earlier made the Royce Lewis comp, which kind of hate to go there, but Jordan Westbrook has kind of earned that. This guy just cannot stay healthy. And unless it's a reserve pick in a fab league for me, I'm not touching Jordan Westbrook right now. It sounds bad, whatever it is.
He's off my board, and if this announcement is something that doesn't involve the oblique or the elbow, it's a new injury, I'm going to be even more like, what is going on here? But maybe he's like staying near the power plant in San Francisco in Santa Clara or something. I don't know, for you Niner fan jokes. But I keep an eye on that one. But the Westbrook deal obviously isn't good. But I guess on the flip side, you got Blaze Alexander. You have Kobe Mayo, like, because with Holiday out right now in camp, Alexander's been playing second, Mayo's been playing third. So something to think about if Westbrook misses time.
And that is going back to spring training, what to parse, what's actionable, what's not. I do think it matters how many at-bats Blaze Alexander, Kobe Mayo get, how they do. That's a spring training battle worth watching, even if it may not be an indirect battle. Whoever gets more playing time out of that, too, could be quite useful for the first part of the season.
And the last bit of news here I have is Lars Nootbaar. If you are a Lars Nootbaar fan, just keep watching what's going on. We mentioned he had like surgery on both of his heels. I guess it's been bothering him for a while. He has not been cleared to run yet. He's been able to hit. He's been able to play catch. But he has not been able to run. They've showed pictures of him going to practice, and he just stands there and watches. So there's no timetable for his return either. Just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, and this is, what, 2 years in a row now of this heel issue? So that's obviously not great. Anytime something recurs a year later, probably not going to magically be fixed by opening day.
Yep, so keep an eye on that. And that also could open the door for the Joshua Baezes, the Nathan Churches of the world, to sneak into the outfield in St. Louis. All right, ADP season. EDP pockets season, pocket two, 100 to 150, Ryan, for the listeners on the YouTube and just for those at home that want to know what we're talking about, what are we looking at on the screen tonight?
All right, so hopefully a little bit more readable just because there's fewer players in this pocket for whatever reason, but we've got hitters on the left, pitchers on the right for those watching the YouTube stream, ordered by ADP. And again, this is all positions because we want to kind of get a view of the player pool from these kind of different slots in the draft as opposed to position base, which is what we've been doing. We've got the projections for batting average, homers, and steals, color-coded for hitters, and then ERA, whip, Ks, and saves. For pitchers, I don't really like this pocket. This is like the back left pocket. You know, I just don't use it. My wallet goes in my back right pocket. I use my two front pockets, right, for the keys, for the phone. I never use the back left. Or maybe this is like I don't really wear cargo shorts. This is the cargo pocket.
Don't trash.
What are we doing? Man.
Don't trash cargo shorts. Don't do it.
All right. We'll stick with back left pocket.
Yes.
We'll
stick with, because also, if you're putting your wallet in your back pocket, you're an old. Just going to throw that out there.
If you're putting your wallet in your back pocket, you're an old.
Because most people now have like these little bridge wallets or something that goes in your front pocket. So you have nothing in your back pockets anymore. Only old people have wallets in their back pockets.
I'm old then. I'm back right. I'm back right every time.
Which is funny because you're a lefty, aren't you?
Yeah, with everything.
Yeah, I was a back left pocket guy when I used to do it. That was the weird part.
And now you're front pocket.
Now front right pocket.
Damn, for your wallet? What's the
wallet?
What about the keys and the phone?
Wallet and pocket knife in the front right, keys in the front left, phone in the back left.
Pocket knife. Didn't know that about you. Jesus.
Yeah, well, I work in ag. Like, yeah, that's what true.
All right, good. Yeah. At least you have an excuse for it. What's in the cargo pocket? What are we doing? Well,
I'll wear those sometimes if I'm not at a nice golf course. And that's a good place to, you know, Carpath, only good place to put a noon, couple other things on your walk.
Dirty Bird, I think that's Wanick. Back left for the wallet. I just can't do it. Feels weird. Front right for the keys for me, and front left for the phone.
Man, the tangents we go on in this show is just great. Anyway,
just figured.
I love it.
We throw that out there. Hey, man. It's like, I think I saw someone said drink every time we say pocket on these on this series of shows.
Oh, they won't make it very far.
You won't make it very far.
Man.
But no, for me, this is that back left pocket of 100 to 150. It's I guess I'll start with the pitchers, and then I'll probably throw it over you on the hitting side. Not a fan of like the really any of these early starting pitchers from 100 to 150. So like we've got just to list off a few: Chase Burns, Brandon Woodruff leading, Blake Snell leading the crew here. This is all 12 team drafts in February from the NFBC, so pretty up to date ADP. After those guys, it's like Zach Wheeler, Glasnow. I have not taken any of those guys, and all those starting pitchers are going from like 100 to 120. I've been waiting towards the back end of this. A few more targets that I like. I actually like the back end pitchers in this pocket more than I do the front end, even straight up, just not even including the price. So you've got that kind of weird dynamic, at least for me, on the starting pitcher side. And on the closer side, this is kind of your last chance to get that capital C closer. You've got, in my opinion, five closers in this pocket of 150, of 100 to 150 that you can grab: Emilio Pagan, Fairbanks, Jeff Hoffman, Daniel Palencia, and Kenley Jansen. Technically, Trevor McGill is bringing up the rear of this group with 22 projected saves. But as we've talked about on our reliever preview, we are both kind of steering clear of that Milwaukee situation. So I don't mind the closing options in this group. And maybe that's why I'm not ending up with some of the starting pitchers here, because this is kind of the last chance, maybe outside of Dennis Santana or Griffin Jacks, as we just talked about, kind of your last chance to, in my opinion, get like a established closer that's still half decent.
Yeah, to add on to this pitching spot, which is interesting because I agree, I'm not a huge fan of the pitching spot outside of the end of the closers we discussed. This is the end of the road for that. What stood out to me, though, is I think a big reason we don't like these guys, to add on to why you don't, is they're either the youths that we don't trust or they're a bunch of injured guys. That's the problem. Like,
right.
The pitchers we like, the three or four we like, are the ones I think we think are healthy and could be stable for the rotation. That's the difference. Because I mentioned that, because if we just look at the board, though, and we trust our projections, it's green still. It's rather green. So in theory,
strikeouts.
Yeah, it's a big strikeout section, but those strikeouts have to come based on innings and health. So that's the kind of catch 22 in this range. So I just want to point that out, because if people are seeing this going, well, why don't you like the range? Like, we like more hitters in the range, and the hitting board is freaking more pink and red than green. The hitting section or the pitching section is actually pretty green. So,
and we also put that part. We put very little stock. I don't want to speak for you. I put very little stock into pitching projections, to be honest. I do all my own manual. I don't look at really that much of the, it's just to give you guys a frame of reference.
Yeah. I like to use them though for the strikeouts. Gives me a rough idea of ratios, but like we've noticed we haven't got to Mackenzie Gore yet. That's going to be the running joke the entire season now, about a 1.25 projected whip. I think we all know that's FUBAR, but it gives us at least a conversation topic on these players to build off of. So yeah, I look at the strikeouts, and then yeah, if the ratios are really wonky, I want to know what's going on in that regard, because they are a little high on most people, like we have discussed. But yeah, I agree with you on the pitching. It's a closers section of the draft, or a couple pitchers later on, which we will discuss in our targets coming up. Hitting side, Ryan, there's a smattering of things here. A lot of outfielders. It's the end of the catchers. If you want a catcher one, it's the end of that road. But what else do you see in this range?
So the catcher cliff is here with Will Smith and Yiner Diaz going at 106 and 113. The next catcher off the board is Adley at 150, bringing up the way bottom of this group. So this is that last chance to get what, in our opinion, is a good catcher one in drafts with Yiner Diaz and Will Smith there right after pick 100. Not many, especially with the Jordan Westberg news, he's technically listed on here, but like second and third base, pretty tough. There's a few more second basemen that I'm okay with in this group, but third base gets pretty rough pretty quick. It's Alex Bregman. Well, it's Eugenio Suarez at 101, Alex Bregman 121, and then Westberg 132, Noelvi Marte 129, he's been off my board. So not much in the way of that position. And then category wise, for me, batting average. We are not seeing much green here in batting average at all. There's a few guys at the top that can provide some good batting average. It may cost you in counting stats like a Bo Bichette or a Nico Horner with power. Outside of that, there is really no one else projected to hit over 270. Yandy Diaz is the only one that sticks out as Oregon Duck Green here with a 285 projected batting average. But to me, there's a lot of kind of batting average sinks here. You can still get homers and power, but this is, again, kind of why we stress getting a good batting average foundation in the early rounds, because you're starting to see it now. There's just not too many options that are good batting average sources for you, and the ones that are, they're going to kind of hurt you elsewhere.
Yeah, a couple things I've noticed here, and you can kind of correlate it back to the previous pockets, is like you hit on average, but then there's also guys where there's like there's the Nico Horners without the power, and then there's a bunch of guys with no speed. We're quickly entering four category players. So it kind of goes to our previous show's discussions when we did previews of positions more so than just the pockets. Of there's a reason like we like to attack a couple five category guys early. And usually it's a shortstop or outfielders when that takes place, because things start to dry up really quick. If we do next Tuesday's episode, it's going to get real murky real quick. But it goes to show you there. You mentioned the third base. This is another reason why also we like the J-Rams, the Machados of the world at third base, maybe some Rileys. And then if we don't get them, we wait. Like, we just don't come in this range for the most part to the names Ryan mentioned. It's the end of your shortstops that I trust to be shortstop ones with Willy Adames. Like, I'd rather him be my middle infielder, yeah. But I could live with him as a shortstop one if I really missed the position and went a different round, if I went pitching heavy, or if I did get a J-Ram or something, it just didn't get my shortstop early. That's a world I could live in as well. So it definitely brings back why you target certain players earlier, is what I'm trying to say. Is that's the thing with these pockets, is how you build things together. And you could look at these and build backwards towards the front, but this is a great way to show you the four categories, the positions. Like, in a vacuum between the pitching and the hitting, we're going to bring it back too often because we're addicted by now, but this is why we like auctions. Like, you could skip this entire range if you wanted to.
Yeah, we were talking before the show, like, I don't even know who I'm picking from, like, pick 100 to 115. Like, I don't like any of the pitchers. Probably one of the closers, or like a Michael Harris, grab that last catcher, Will Smith, Yiner Diaz. But like, I don't know. Yeah, this is kind of a section where I'm like, again, back left pocket, folks. Back left. A lot of chatter where people put their wallets in the chat tonight, which, again, did not expect to go down that rabbit hole. Do want to reiterate, Bubba, very good point on shortstop. There are only three shortstops going in this entire range. I only like one of them, really. Like, I'm not a huge Bo Bichette fan at the price. Nope. And I'm not a Trevor Story fan at the price at 106, because I just, can he stay healthy for 2 years in a row? I do like Willy Adames, but again, this is, we've kind of hit this many times in the shortstop position. Just because there's a lot of good shortstops doesn't mean you can get him in these middle rounds, because you really can't. So if you're building kind of a draft plan from this middle pocket forward, you don't see really many or any shortstops that you like. It just kind of reinforces that grab one of those elite seven or eight or whatever that we talked about on the shortstop preview.
Agreed. In the chat here, Anthony says, how many five category guys do you feel comfortable taking at least? Well, I hope at least
as many as possible.
Yeah. But yeah, it's whatever makes your build. I guess it comes down to the more important question is, how many pitchers do you want before pick 100?
Yeah.
Because that'll tell you how many five category guys you're probably going to take.
Yep, that's true.
So that's what you'd have to research, Anthony. I usually would try to get three if I'm doing a snake draft, three five category players, because I'm also waiting pitching kind of guy. Anything else while you look at these boards, Ryan? Because it's just not great. There's a lot of questions. There's the youths that are. Like, do you really trust Luke Kuechel's stat line type stuff? Like, I'm just naming certain names, but there's a lot of questionable situations. Or there's just some olds, like Jose Altuve. Yeah, it's nice, but for how much longer? Like, 260, 2012 stat line is good, but is that ADP 120 good?
Yep. I've ended up with some Altuve. He comes out for me about par with that. But yeah, I don't have a lot of screaming targets, to be honest, on the hitter side. A couple of them later, but yeah, up top it's kind of rough.
Yes, it is. But all right, if you're ready, then let's do some ADP debates, and we'll kick it off with your first one, Ryan. And go figure, we have an old that you like versus the young. So let's just get to it right away.
But so I need to challenge myself here, and so that I should probably name the players. That would probably be good podcasting. It's two players on the same team, same position, basically the same projection at the exact same price. That's Teoscar Hernandez at pick 140 and Andy Pajes going at pick 140. Both projected to hit 255, 260. Mid to upper 20s home runs and just south of 10 stolen bases. I obviously am a big Teoscar fan, but the more I did an episode with Eric Halterman on the RotoWire podcast a couple weeks ago. Great concepts called Finding This Year's Nick Castellanos. And just guys who are being drafted early in drafts who are just not good real life players. And Teoscar Hernandez, I think, had 0.9 WAR last year, Bubba. So, like, my kind of counter to that is, like, I think Teoscar's a better hitter than what we saw in 2025. So I think he's actually better than 0.9. But what if he's not? Like, what if Teoscar, who is, you mentioned, he's an old. This is will be Teoscar's, I think, age 33 season. Yep. That's at the point of the aging curve where things tend to not go very well. And if you're already a one WAR player, again, we don't play WAR in fantasy, but it can equate to playing time, especially on a team like the Dodgers. I don't know. I'm kind of second guessing my Teoscar love. He's someone where their projection always says to take him at the pick, but I think there is some downside to that. Whereas Andy Pajes, I think, is really good. Like I think he's legit. I think he's 27 homers, 14 steals last year, .272 batting average, a little over his skis per the skills, but not that much. But the biggest thing, age 25 season, like, yeah, he might hit in the bottom of the Dodgers order, but that doesn't really bother me at all. The other thing that does not bother me is Andy Pajes's admittedly horrific struggles in the postseason, but I don't think that really matters. So it's just an interesting kind of juxtaposition of guys. When I was looking through the list, like, I have a ton of Teoscar, I don't have much Andy Pajes, and maybe I need to revisit that because for really all the reasons I just laid out there.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think Andy Pajes is the pick here. There's nothing against Teoscar, but Teoscar is a player that I still think can be very good, but I don't think he's the top 150 ADP good anymore. I think he falls kind of in a bucket behind. I just don't think he's going to run that much anymore. He was hurt most of last year, and he played hurt, so I'll give him that benefit of the doubt. I just don't think we're getting like a 280 hitter again. I think 25 home runs, like, I guess what we're maxing out at. So I think last year's stat line maybe gets more runs than RBIs, but it's pretty similar to what we saw there, and that's if everything goes well and he stays healthy. And as you get older, right, obviously, like you said, those things don't happen. And there's a little thing here. Well, I'll get to that in a minute. Andy Pajes, fully agree. I joke about it when I was talking with Miles and others that it seems to be the quietest 27-14, 272 season in baseball, because I think everyone's still, like you said, reflecting on the postseason of horror. But the positive out of that postseason, as bad as he was hitting, his defense is that good.
Yep.
Because they kept, even if he didn't start, they brought him late for defense. And as Miles pointed out, because Miles is team Andy over Teoscar as well, the Dodgers don't have any other center field options. Pajes is the dude in center. The Dodgers have other quarter outfield options if things don't go perfect with Teoscar, like if he needs more days off, or if he really struggles, or if he goes on the aisle. There's like a litany of options for Teoscar to lose playing time potentially. Pajes, there's really no one else in center, because even Edmonds hurt and isn't really that good in center. Like, they're trying Hyesung Kim in center. That's not going to work. Pajes is the dude. He's going to play. He played 156 games last year. So yeah, I'm with you. I'll take Pajes every single time as well.
Burks in the chat says 38 barrels on those. What do you say? 38 barrels on the 27 home runs. Question mark, a little lucky. Potentially. Yep, that does check out to a little bit of luck on the home run side, though. If I pull up Rob DiPietro's pulled barrel sheet, a lot of Andy Pajes' barrels were pulled. So, and honestly, in Dodger Stadium, which is a friendlier hitter park than
you
think.
That's where I was going to see that. Dodger Stadium's very live.
Pajes could approach that again in 2026, that ratio. So,
no, and I'll agree. It's a little potentially like a 22.2% home run to fly ball. Not really that sustainable. That's a peak number. But in the minors, he was an 18.5, 20.9. Like, he's shown these skills, is my point, to be a powerhouse. And he's young. It's the narrative I say a lot, that a lot of people probably like, come on, Bub. I'm like, I'll give these young guys that have proven a pretty good skill set a benefit of the doubt that there might be even more to them that we just don't know yet, because he hits the ball well. At worst, give me 25 and 15, and we dance. Like, he's already better than Teoscar at that point. So, yeah. It's a good one. I'm glad you brought it up, because I think most people go straight to Teoscar.
I always do. And I'm trying to better myself as part of the show here. You know, not just automatically go for the old dude.
I've witnessed it. You have bettered yourself. I will say that much. All right. My first debate is going to be two outfielders. Joe Adell, ADP 124 with a 238, 31, and 10 projection. Kyle Stowers at 130 with a 241, 26, and 4. So a little better average for Stowers, fewer homers, fewer steals. But I bring this up because it feels like everyone, well, that's kind of mixed, but it feels like a lot of people are, especially lately, tweeting about Kyle Stowers and what could be with Kyle Stowers. We saw Adell hit the 37 home runs last year, didn't run because he couldn't because of his, leg injuries that he played through. But Stowers ended the season on the IL in 117 games at 288, 25 homers, 5 steals. Like, on paper, he blows the power out of the water of Adell and hit for a higher average last year. Yep. Now, some will say the average isn't sustainable as well, but there's been some great tweets out there that if you look at Kyle Stowers, you know, just 19% barrel, 52% hard hit rates, you know, max EV of almost 114. He's in a select category of elite hitters that hit the ball like that. There's a lot of, which Stowers do we get? How much regression should we factor in? And then with Adell, he upped his barrel to 17.2, a hard hit of 49.6, and a max EV of almost 116. So we know what he can do. I think they're very, very similar players going right next to each other.
Yeah,
I'm still a team Adell guy just because I think there's more speed in him if his legs are healthy this year. I think we could get back to that 12 to 15 steal guy. But what are your thoughts on this one?
That's probably the tiebreaker I would go with too, because I don't see much in difference in terms of like the batting average power profile. So like, I mean, they're both, you listed out all the numbers, right? Joe Adell had a top 10 barrel rate among qualified hitters last year. That's really damn good. Kyle Stowers' barrel rate was even higher. He just didn't have enough plate appearances to be a qualified hitter. So I think at least the potential for Joe Adell to maybe run again if fully healthy in 2026 gives me the nod, but I have not ended up with either one. I always get scared of, and this is the same concern for both of these guys, is just like, they've been so bad for so long. How much stock do we put into one good season? And in Stowers' case, one partial good season. I'm always going to be kind of a track record guy, and at the prices that they're going, I'm just a little bit hesitant. I don't think they're bad picks by any means. It's just I kind of have that in the back of my head when I'm, this is like an outfield three type of pick, and I have not ended up on either one. But I think if I had to pick one, I think I would go Adell just in case he can spike 15 to 20 steals. I don't think certainly would not project that because he didn't run much last year, but I see that in at least the realm of possibility for Joe Adell, where Stowers, I think his speed's pretty capped.
Yep. I agree. I think Stars is capped. I think, weirdly enough, I'll take the Angels ballpark over Miami's lineups, though. That's tough. They're both kind of in their own way. Miami's might actually be a little better than Anaheim's, but
I guess one more thing too, like Stowers, at least I'm looking at his baseball forecaster page, which includes minor league numbers. He has not had a season since post COVID of 500 plate appearances across the majors and minors combined. So like, it's just very tricky to expect a full season there.
Good call. Do you have a second ADP debate, or do you want me to go to mine?
I do. I didn't type it in our little sheet here. Okay. Things got away from me in the afternoon, but
just checking.
With these ADP debates, they're not really debates between me and you. It's more just highlighting similar players, similar spots in the draft. This is also an opportunity that I like, especially with like Annie Pies, to talk about players who I haven't really drafted much. We talk about second base. I'm going to go Luke Kuechel versus Sedan Rafaela. Rafaela does qualify at outfield, but those two are going seven picks apart. Picks 133 for Kuechel, 140 for Sedan Rafaela, and at least similar type profiles. Like, if we look at the projections, Rafaela's projected to hit for more power, roughly the same amount of stolen bases, though I think Kuechel has a higher stolen base ceiling than Sedan Rafaela. I have no idea what to project for Luke Kuechel's batting average. This thing says 266. I don't know. I feel like Sedan Rafaela is the safer player if you're in a 15 teamer or if you're in a draft and hold, especially with the multi-position eligibility. That seems like the safer move to me, whereas Luke Kuechel, I feel like, has a low floor just because we haven't seen him very much and we haven't seen MLB pitchers adjust to Luke Kuechel. But I also think Luke Kuechel has a ceiling that is considerably higher than Sedan Rafaela's. So I don't have a firm lean either way. I don't know if you've taken either one of these guys much in drafts. I haven't, but I just saw those two next to each other and I was like, that's interesting to talk about.
I think I took a Kuechel like one of my very first drafts and I backed off real quickly. I like the batting average upside of Luke Kuechel. I like the speed upside of Luke Kuechel. I think if you're in an OBP league, Luke Kuechel's outstanding. I don't believe there's a lot of power with Kuechel at all. And similar to like your Stowers comment, like he hasn't played a whole lot of games any season either since he was drafted. It was 2023, so it's a small sample, but he really hasn't stayed on the field much as well. So that's slightly concerning. Rafaela, I like a lot. The average might not be great. Like, he's hit 241, 246, 249 in his three big league stints. Last 2 years, he played over 152 games or more, which is good. And we've seen 15 and 19 and 16 and 20. So we've got a good power speed skill set, both very young to your point. And Rafaela brings elite defense. That's what's going to keep him on the field. So, like, for me, if he can continue to play 150 plus games, we're going to get at least 15-15. Maybe he strikes into a 20-20 because he hits all of a sudden it's like 255, 260, just a minor tweak. I like Rafaela a lot more than Kuechel. I think Kuechel, to your point, might have the higher ceiling if he ever figures out how to stay healthy and maybe can elevate the ball a little more, but that's a big if at this point in time. I think he's more of a, I don't know if that's not the right comp, but he's kind of like a rich man's Arise to me. He's going to hit for average, but a little more pop, more speed than Arise. So he goes higher than him, but I don't think there's really, like, at that ADP, I'm not getting as much as I want, if that makes sense.
I could see Luke Kuechel stealing like 40, 50 bases though, if he stays healthy. Potentially. Like, but I think he does,
like,
have that.
Do you like Xavier Edwards then?
No, but Kuechel has more power than Xavier Edwards. I mean, he's projected for 12. Like, I think he has double digit home run power potentially, where Edwards is like one to two.
That's fair.
Home run
that's
power. Fair. But yeah, I think Kuechel, I think, is just a little bit overpriced for the floor that he brings. I think the other point, I don't think you mentioned this, I think you may have mentioned it before, but Sedan Rafaela theoretically won't be jerked around different positions this year. He'll get to settle in, and that will help a player of his youth.
Yes, very, very true. That'll help tremendously. So yeah, I lean Rafaela. Plus, again, he's done it two full seasons, essentially. We're waiting for Kuechel to do it. All right, for me, my last one, I already know your answer to this, and I apologize, but I didn't see many other really good debates to put on here, so I usually try not to put one of our targets in a debate, but or a fade even in our debate if we can, but I did, just because they're going next to each other with like almost identical projections is why this stood out to me. It's Nick Lodolo and Ryan Pepiot. Lodolo at 129, Pepiot at 132. They're both projected for an ERA of 420. Lodolo a 121 whip, Pepiot 125. Lodolo 154 Ks, Pepiot 169. So slightly better whip for Lodolo, more Ks for Pepiot. I like them both a ton. I've drafted both a ton. I probably have more Lodolo shares than Pepiot, but I like them both. I'm a strikeout person. That's just one thing I always reiterate that I want.
Good filter.
Yeah, I was like going to say something else there, but yeah. so that's something I really want to continue to be heavily focused on with him. But yeah, you look at Lodolo, like he still had 156 Ks last year and 156 innings, basically a K per inning. So it comes down to workload with him. Like we've always said, can he stay healthy? I think projections are too light on him. I think if we're getting 170 plus innings out of Lodolo, now we're talking 170, 180 strikeouts from Lodolo, which could be very good. I'm trying not to steal all your thunder because he is a target of yours we will talk about shortly. But on the flip side, Pepio is very similar. He's a K per inning guy. They're almost identical pitchers to me. Just one's lefty and one's righty. One pitches in a better ballpark, one doesn't. So I have more Lodolo. I'd probably think Pepio's the safer play, but they're both very, very good. I just thought it was interesting right next to each other, especially this pocket. We don't like a lot of pitching. Like my three favorite targets go right next to each other, essentially. So I just want to bring them up on that one.
Which is probably why we're not buying many of the earlier starting pitchers in this pocket, because we like these later guys straight up. I won't talk too much about Lodolo. I'll talk about him later. But Pepio, I think you make great points. He finally got over that innings hump last season with 168 innings, had not thrown over 130 entering last season, and I think should get a big boost from going back to the trot. 19 of Pepio's 26 home runs allowed last year per the Baseball Forecaster were at the hell they call it, Steinbrenner Field. So that will not be an issue anymore. Pepio was able to handle the innings bump last year. In the second half, he was a little bit of a spike in walk rate, but the ball percentage was pretty much right in line. Missed more bats in the second half, and velocity was firm. So, like, I think Ryan Pepio, now that he threw 170, I think he could go out and do that again and like the park a lot more. So, I like Lodolo more, but Pepio is fine. Another kind of why not both GIF type situation here.
Yeah, no, why not both is correct. All right. So, with that said, let's get to our targets in this category. And this is a guy you've looked to target quite a bit.
One of my favorite hitter targets in the entire game. This is a youth. I've talked about Jacob Marcy before, but I just love the ceiling here for Marcy. I love the playing time situation for Jacob Marcy, and I love the price for Jacob Marcy, which is 148. He's got a rare stake red batting average projection of 228. I'm betting the firm over on that. He hit 292 last year. He's not going to hit 292 again, but a 20% strikeout rate, a better than average strikeout rate for Jacob Marcy last season. I don't see how he's projected to hit 228. One of my favorite metrics in the Baseball Forecaster that we put out every year, and it's available if you buy it through HQ, is what Ed DeCaria does and breaks playing time down into component metrics. And one of them is plate appearances per active week. And basically that's saying in weeks that you were healthy, how many plate appearances did you get in that week? Jacob Marcy, though he was only active for 8 weeks, led the entire major leagues in plate appearances per active week. I think this guy can get 700 plus plate appearances leading off for the Marlins, or at least hitting near the top of the order, probably leadoff. I think the speed is elite. I think there's enough power there that this is not a Xavier Edwards type situation. Like, yes, there has not been the MLB track record, so I can't sit here and bag Luke Kuechel and not at least acknowledge it with Jacob Marcy. But Jacob Marcy's going 20, 30 picks later, and I just think is a better bet to unlock a kind of a huge mid-round breakout. I love Jacob Marcy this year.
Yeah, I was really excited about him early on. I, for some reason, took a step back. Maybe I was listening to I had Chris Towers on saying if Marcy doesn't play well early, he's not guaranteed time in the bigs, but I don't see how he doesn't. That's why I'm on your side on this one. I guess I slowed down my going crazy roll on Jacob Marcy, because he did hit he's projected to hit 228. And we saw it last year. It was real hot early and it kind of slowed down, if that makes sense. It was still good. He had 292, like it was nuts, but he was very streaky in that regard. I remember he had a series in Coors where he went absolutely bonkers, just insane in Coors. So I think he's good. I'm with you. I think he's going to run wild, but I slowed down a little bit on him. I think he'll be pretty good still.
So Towers thinks there's, and he knows Miami more, obviously, better than I do. He thinks there's some playing time risk if Marcy doesn't produce right away.
Yes, he does, because they have a ton of outfielders over there. Gotcha. A ton. a ton of outfielders. Yeah. But I'd be shocked if he did. Like it would take, I think, a massive fall to make that happen. Like the way their team's built, he needs to be in that lineup. All right, for me, to the surprise of nobody, it's like Ryan picking his next target we will talk about. I am taking Sonny Gray. This is like one of you love him as well, so I can't say he's just my guy.
He's an old. He puts his wallet in his back pocket, I'll tell you that.
He just puts his gold card back there. I got him for $12 in the auction. I was very happy with that. Sonny Gray, 180 innings last year. He had 180 or more in two of the last three, 166 and three straight, which I'll take even. The strikeouts continue to improve. He's been filthy in that regard. Everyone looks at that 4.28 ERA, but indicators show just how unlucky he was last year. He was still very, very good. 201 Ks, that's back-to-back years over 200 strikeouts, which is pretty much impossible to find at this this pocket of ADP. You just don't see a guy getting that many strikeouts. Like we're looking at Sonny Gray with an ADP of 133. Those 200 K guys pretty much start disappearing. He had a 1.23 whip, which was the worst he's had since 2021. And it was mainly because he got batted to death because he still had a 5% walk rate, which is the best in his entire career. So to have a 1.23 whip, have his best walk rate, and then you look at that old number, 329 BABIP, which was the worst of, his career. So like things just went so, so wrong for Sonny Gray. The only thing I will say, if you want to play devil's advocate, is he'll be 36. So I totally get that. He's getting to that really old level of pitcher, like where eventually it's going to break, but he hasn't shown signs of that. He's a heck of a pitcher, not just a thrower. Yeah. So I'm in.
I mean, look at the last 3 years of Sonny Gray. The skills are just awesome. And the volume has been there. 184, 166, 181 innings. So like, yeah, I get concerned about age for like a Teoscar who's injured and, you know, above replacement level barely, but like Sonny Gray, I mean, there are plenty of pitchers who are very good into their mid late 30s, and Sonny Gray, like, yeah, age is just a number, man. This guy, the skills show no sign of age related decline. So until I see that, I'm not backing off. Sonny Gray's an awesome buy. I agree.
Yep, his price keeps going down, but his skills have not deteriorated. So I'm in. He's only gotten better. All right, I'm gonna leave the room for a minute. I'll let you take care of this one. This is your guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's for my least favorite pocket so far. It has probably two of my favorite targets, or my two favorite targets potentially, in Marcy and on the hitting side, and Nick Lodolo on the pitching side. I just think the skills are through the roof for Lodolo. They're not only good, I think they're potentially elite. Down the stretch last year, last 2 months of the season, the best combination of swinging strike rate and ball rate of any pitcher in baseball last year after August. And he did it with a 50% ground ball rate. I think Nick Lodolo could be an absolute ace, a top 10 pitcher if everything goes right. I talk all the time about kind of the importance of nailing these middle rounds and hitting a couple of these breakouts in these middle rounds, because these guys are good enough to ascend to a first round type of production, whereas the end game guys, they're just all kind of dart throws. I think Nick Lodolo is that dude this year. Yes, you worry about the workload, but did throw 157 innings last year. A lot of his injuries have been non-arm related. Age 28 season. Like, I think Nick Lodolo can be an ace, and I think you're getting that, like, a legit top 10 pitcher ace, and you're getting that at pick 129, where if you look at a projection, it's a rare steak red 4.20 ERA and a 1.21 whip. I love Nick Lodolo.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. I already talked about him plenty. He's awesome. He's one of the guys we'll probably talk about in listener questions, that if he throws 170 plus innings, he's what, top 70, top 60? Like, he's way up the ADP board next year.
Top 30. I think he's that good, man. I do.
Like, do you think he's as good as Christopher Sanchez?
I mean, Christopher Sanchez was going around this rate.
That's why
I asked. Part of the draft last year. So, like, sure. I mean, no, he's probably not going to be as good as Christopher Sanchez, but this type of breakout just happened, and I think it's a very similar profile. So, would I be surprised? Not really.
Good. That's what I was wondering. All right. For me, it's Daniel Palencia. We're talking about this kind of the last tier of pitchers. It's a guy that we loved last year. He picked up Fab everywhere. He was great, got hurt, didn't really close when he came back, but they used him more in high leverage. ADP of 129. We saw 22 saves last year in his 54 games. The 2.91 ERA I thought was really good because, you know, it's not like he's wild or anything, a 7.4% K rate, but he was out there hurling it. 28.4% K rate, 21% K to walk, which is great. But yeah, to not be one of the elite closers off the board, but to have a sub-3 ERA and a whip below 1.2, that usually doesn't correlate the farther down the saves board you go. Like, that's my point to how good he is. Usually when the saves go down, like you go to Kinley coming up, yeah, he still gets his saves, but his strikeouts drop and his ratios are up. Like, that's where he starts to go to. Palencia, to me, if you give him a full season in that role, there's zero chance he's worth this ADP. Like, his stuff, I think, is that good to be moving on up the board here. And we would, again, he'll be, I'm still surprised he's in this conversation. I guess it's because people are still concerned he won't have the job all year for some reason. But Council's already said he will. If you trust coaches, that's up to you. I kind of do, because they've had a chance to sign a million guys this offseason, and they did, but they're all seventh and eighth inning guys. They didn't sign any of the potential closers to work that bullpen. So it's Palencia's world. I love Palencia. I think his skills are electric. I'm not gonna say elite, electric. And I think he can be very, very good. So if you wait on closers, fine for an RP1. I love having him as an RP2 if you get really aggressive in closing.
I mean, elite, electric, it's kind of the same thing.
Right? And bingo. Yeah, tomato, tomato. Front pocket, back pocket, who knows?
No, big difference. Big difference between front and back pocket. My God. So, I mean, the elephant in the room that you did not mention is the health. I think that's why Daniel Palencia is going at this price. I fully agree. The skills are awesome. I fully agree he has the job. The Cubs, for the second year in a row, did not sign a closer, and Palencia is, I think, the guy. I do worry about someone who missed time with a shoulder issue in September and throws. He averaged 99.7 miles an hour on his fastball last year. So that's the only, and I have Plenty is my second most rostered closer. So I'm just giving the devil's advocate side of here. And generally I agree with you, especially at the price where really your only closer going after this is like Kenley Jansen and Dennis Santana. I love Plenty a lot more than those guys. I'm just kind of saying, I think that's why the market is still kind of devaluing Plenty. Is he's no slam dunk to stay healthy, but if he can stay healthy, I think he's a beast. I think he's got plenty of leash too.
Yep, totally agree. All right, as people might expect, it's actually hard to narrow down our fades based on the way we talked about this list. So Ryan will give you the first one here, and he's kind of young. Well, both of them are, never mind.
Oh, both of them are young. But hey, man, I nominated Marcy as my target, so I'm free from
You're good.
From my ageist accusations. For me, it's Noelvi Marte. It's really Noelvi Marte at the price, ADP 129. The projections do not like Noelvi Marte at all. I do not really like Noelvi Marte at all. I do understand he looked really good down the stretch last year. He's age 24 season, plenty of prospect pedigree. So I fully understand I could be missing out on a legitimate breakout here. But one of our favorite sayings, right, is I'm happy to be wrong on this one. And if I miss it, that's okay. I'll be rooting for Noelvi Marte. I just think I need to see more from Marte in the majors. I think the Reds quietly, by continuing to add pieces like tangentially close to Noelvi Marte, are not 100% convinced Noelvi Marte can stick in the majors all season. They've sent him down before. I just think there's a really low floor there with Noelvi Marte at a price of 129 that I'm not willing to pay.
Yeah, this is a guy that I was very excited about early in draft season. But again, as the Reds kept signing people, I got concerned. Like our buddy John Wilder in the chat, the Discord, big Reds guy, follows him religiously. He still believes they're going to put him in right field. And if they do, if he plays all season, I think he's going to be better than people think. But then there's a whole slew of people that don't believe he's any good. So there's a lot of what ifs with Noelvi, and we're still in a range of top 150 where I don't take that many what ifs is the problem. So like a lot of me wants to see him be great. I think he can be, but there's a lot, like it's not even 150. He's inside 130. So it's like, exactly. He's right next to Adele and Stowers. Like I'll take both of them.
And we'll both take Matt Chapman, whatever pixel, yeah. 80 pixel, whatever Matt Chapman's going. It's mostly the price, but it's also, yeah, it's just, I do agree that Noelvi Marte starts the season as a starter. It's just any prolonged slump, like the Reds just have so many other options. They can just plop in there and honestly not skip a beat. So that's what scares me.
Yep, I agree. I agree. For me, this is pretty simple. It's just a complete injury fade for me, and it's Lou Bob, and it could come back to bite us. Could, but I don't think it will. We'll see. He's already getting slow played in spring training to keep his lower body healthy, is what the Mets said. Lou Bob's only going to be 28, which does surprise me a bit. It feels like he's been playing forever. His hamstrings are probably 42. But we saw 110 games from Lou Bob, second highest of his career. We saw 14 homers, 33 steals. The 223 average is what really concerns me, because it's 223 last year, 224 the year before. He did it last year just with a really low BABIP, because he improved his strikeout rate to 26%, the best he's had in the last three seasons, and he walked more than his entire career last season, which was a plus. This is why this could come back to bite me. If he slightly figures things out, and if Lou Bob can play 130-plus games, he's probably worth the price here. So I'll clarify that. It's the batting average. He has to find a way to get that BABIP back up, because BABIP back up with not striking out at the same time. And that's what I don't know if it's a whole approach change to what he's doing, but I'll just be fading him. It's a combination of the health, the batting average. It doesn't even give you that much power, weirdly enough. It's straight.
No,
it's straight,
that's steals the play. Yeah. That's...
And at that point, I'll take Jacob Marcy, like you have. Like, so it's just a weird profile. I think everyone's still shooting for the moon with Lou Bob, because I think we can all sit back and agree, like, it's a Byron Buxton profile. Like, if he hits it, it's going to be awesome. We saw 38-20 before. I just don't know if we're ever going to see it again, and I'm not paying the price for it. And that's just, again, the kind of safety way that you and I both draft.
And I don't think it's just a question of health, to your point with Lou Bob. Like, I think there it's health, and it's like a pretty bad power profile and a bad projected batting average. Like, a lot has to go right for Lou Bob to do it. And give me Marcy 50 picks later, pretty much any time, or even at the same price. We haven't even talked about the cover boy of the thumbnail of the show, which is my fault. But Michael Harris, basically the same price as Luis Robert. Like, while you're going to get wild in-season swings, perhaps, with Michael Harris, you kind of know you're going to get 20-20 at the end of the year with a good batting average. And I'm gonna take that over Luis Robert Jr. every time.
Yeah, if I want a guy with questionable power but tons of speed, I'll take Nico Hoerner three picks later.
Hell, take Luke Kuechel. Yeah. Take. I've already said Marcy, but yes, there are other options that are cheaper.
Agreed. So. All right, who's your other fade again? Well, I would have probably picked him if you did, so it's fair.
Yeah, this is it's weird. Three out of my four targets and fades are Reds. So I don't know. One of them was a target, so.
MLB TV's going to get worked out on the Reds games. He's going to be glued to that thing.
They've got a lot. They're a fascinating team, man.
Oh, they are. They have the Central is, like, the Pirates are much better than I think people think. Like, really are. Like, it's an interesting division. The Cardinals are the bottom feeders right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and will be. I think they're the only team.
No, it's not changing. They're going to compete with the White Sox and the Rockies for previous season's worst records in baseball.
Yeah, like a truly horrendous squad.
The only thing they didn't do was bring Miles Mikolas back. That would have really put the cherry on top.
Yeah, but no, he had to block Patrick Corbin in with the Nationals. So
that's fine. Patrick Corbin's going to go to a better situation.
Yeah,
you brought it up. It wasn't me.
My fade is. I did. He does come up on every single episode. Mostly because of you, but sometimes because of
me. That's the other drinking game, not just pockets. If Patrick Corbin's name comes up, shotgun a beer.
Okay, Patrick Corbin's a wallet back pocket, has to be.
Oh, 100%. Like, and he's got 100%. One of those grandpa ones that has like all of his old cards even expired. He's got like 17 receipts in the back. Like,
I don't know if he's a dad, but he fits the dad vibe.
Yeah.
100%. Someone who does not fit the dad vibe yet, because he's only 22, 23, whatever. Chase Burns is my fade. He is the number one starting pitcher in this pocket at pick 101. And I think for me, just the case is clear. Like, Chase Burns, I love the talent. I do not love the injury history. I do not love the velocity and that lasting for an entire season. So, yes, I think Chase Burns is a very good raw talent on a per inning basis. He could be damn fun to watch. The numbers last year were very good. I'm not really debating the skills. And I think a lot of that includes that one Red Sox game where Chase Burns, the Red Sox knew what was coming, and Chase Burns, I think that was the second start of his career, the first start after Fab ran last year, did not get out of the first inning. I think gave up 7 runs to the Red Sox. Even with that included, the numbers for Chase Burns were pretty damn good last year. I just can't trust the guy to stay healthy for a full season at pick 101. If he does, awesome, kudos. You probably got a decent profit, but he also still needs to pitch well and last the full season to turn the profit here. So I'm just scared as hell on the injury front for Chase Burns. Like, I know he came back from the, what was it, a forearm or flexor strain, but it was either more of like, whatever the hell it was certainly arm related, and it was not good. Came back, but it was like in a fireman multi-inning type thing. It was not a starter's workload. So I just can't see Chase Burns lasting a full season as a starter, and I probably won't draft him until he does that. And I know the risk with that is you miss out on that first breakout season, but again, that's a risk I'm willing to take.
And people will say, well, that the injury was fake and they were limiting his innings and so on and so forth, and maybe it was, but I'm with you. I'll avoid that. I'm pretty much out on all the young guys because my fade is Jacob Mizrowski. The Miz, electric factory, also walks the barn from time to time. Guy had an 11.4% walk rate with a 32% K rate. So that's like the best of the best and the worst of the worst at the same time. And he's had above a 10% K walk rate his entire career in the minors. So it's not just like it was a welcome to the bigs fluke situation. His profile screams, put me in the ninth coach. That's what the Miz's profile screams. Now they're going to start him because they need starters in Milwaukee, but for how long is the question as well. Between AAA and the bigs, though, we saw him throw about 130 innings, so he's stretched out. That's not the question at hand here. For me, it's just, you know, what can we do when and he pitched really well with his 69% left on base rate. So like he kind of, you know, got away with the, well, he wasn't fortunate, so I'm trying to say he could get better in that regard. He has walked the farm. I can't throw a guy out there. I know, shocker. We're talking whip here. I can't do that. And so the Miz will not be on my cards this year. Just not going to happen. I think he's best fit for the ninth inning unless he somehow learns how to just lower to like 7.5%, and he can be ridiculous.
But it's been double digits when forever. You include minor league equivalents or whatever. It's been double digits. Not even double digits. It's been 14, 15, and 13% in the minors when you equate that. I mean, that's a huge walk rate. And not only for the whip directly, but indirectly, how often is this guy going over 5 innings in a game if he's walking 15% of the batters? I mean, the Brewers are not going to push this guy with heavy pitch counts. And you don't have heavy pitch counts. You walk a ton of guys. It's just like five and dive type deal. And wins do matter. I like to look at wins as much as I do the other categories here, and I don't have Mizrowski projected for that many wins. So agree, man. I'm with you.
Yep. All right. Any final thoughts on this before we get to the listener questions?
No, let's hit the listener questions.
All right, let's do it here from the Discord. Straface23 says, who in this range could be a top 50 overall pick next season? It rhymes with Versace in case it comes up. Oh, Straface. So it's Strafacci.
Strafacci.
Oh, Jesus Louise. Okay. Got it. Who's in the top 50? Is it Lodolo? Is that your guy?
Good job. Good job on your first question there,
Papa. These guys love messing with me. It's a beautiful thing.
So, yes, Lodolo, but I've already talked about him. I'll throw a new name out there that could finish top 50. I will say Emmett Sheehan is good enough to finish top 50 and be top 50 guy next year.
Yeah, I'll throw one out there we didn't talk about because there is an injury concern, but if he does only miss a month of the season, Zach Wheeler, if you get 5 months of Zach Wheeler. Sure. If you get 5 months of Zach Wheeler, I did want to at least mention that because he's ahead of schedule. He's already starting to throw. Like they're saying he could be back sometime in May. If you get 4.5 to 5 months out of Wheeler, we've seen him pitch like 5.5 months and give you a top 20 result. So I'd say Zach Wheeler for me.
At ADP of 119, and just to kind of give that context, going right before like Glass now, like, yeah, give me Wheeler, yep. Even though I don't have any of them, but I don't have any Glass now.
It's serious because you have Gossman going right after that. That's where you and I both go to Gossman every time. Grizzmania 99. I see a lot of projections predicting under 30 home runs for Michael Busch. Are there underlying metrics that are signaling a drop off of 5 to 10 home runs?
I mean, that's probably just regressing back to the mean here, right? Because Michael Busch in 2024 had an 11% barrel rate. That jumped all the way up to 17% and 20% in the second half. So you kind of take two sides of this coin. It's like, yeah, maybe most likely that falls back a little bit. But to your point, and I know Michael Busch isn't a prospect anymore, but it's only his second full season in the majors last year. These guys can improve, and Michael Busch has continuously improved. In the baseball forecaster, we've got a projection of 33 home runs for Michael Busch, and I like that, and I'm in agreement with that more than I am the 26 home runs projected here by the public Fangraph systems at pick 111. So I think Michael Busch has 30 home run power. Yep.
Yes, I do as well. I wrote about him in that Bloom Board first half, second half barrel increasers because he stood out like a sore thumb. But I'll give you the caveats I mentioned in there. There's two things that the way that you could not see it happening. I think if he plays all season, you see it. But two things, they did bring in a power hitting right-handed first baseman that there's nowhere else for him to play. So that makes no sense. If Austin makes it out of camp, there might be a world where Busch gets kind of hosed on that one. Not sure how. It'd be stupid. They've done dumber things. I just want to put that in the ether. The other thing that stood out to me when I wrote about Michael Busch, and it could just be a one-year sample, who cares? And we know Wrigley has been a weird park factor lately. He hit for a 262 average at home, 261 on the road, but 13 home runs at home, 21 on the road. So he relied on road home runs a lot. And still, half your games are on the road. That's fine. I'm just saying, like, I think he needs to pick up the pace at home to get you a more comfortable 30 home run season is where I'm going with that. All righty on this one. Moose says, did Adley do anything different this offseason to help him get his head out of his, you know what? He's too young to become irrelevant for the rest of his career.
It's an odd career arc, man.
Yeah, he's the Matt Wieters of the Orioles again. He's following the pattern.
But he was good for a little bit.
For like 1.5 years, yes.
Yeah, he was good. Like his first year and a half, and then I don't know what the hell happened. I gave Adley Rutschman a mulligan last year, but I'm not willing to do it 2 years in a row. So Rutschman at pick 150 here. That's why I think at the top when we were kind of reviewing this pocket, why I mentioned the Will Smith, Yiner Diaz cliff is because I think there's a big gap and the market does too, right? Those two guys are going 106, 113. Adley Rutschman's going 150. Big talent gap between those two. So
yep,
I don't trust Rutschman to turn it around until I see something.
Yeah, I think his skills are basic. It's a poor man's Will Smith. He doesn't hit for the average Will Smith does, but he's gonna potentially get you like close to, you know, 18 to 20 home runs like Will Smith. Like, there's a lot of similarities in that regard, but as long as Samuel Basayo has a pulse,
Playing time cap too, right? Yeah,
yep. Nowhere near that situation. Like nothing. Dustin Anderson says, yeah. Sorry.
No, go ahead. I was going to say Basayo or Rutschman. I know Basayo is probably on the next show.
Oh, but neither. It's neither for me. Because they're going to eat into each other. I just want nothing to. With all the other catching options out there, I'm not taking a platoon this early. That's a deep catcher two, not a potential catcher one for me.
Okay.
All righty. Dustin Anderson says, looks like a lot more green with the. Well, I will say this. If you want to go for a ceiling, you take Basayo because he could DH some. But I'm confused on what they're going to do. Dustin Anderson says, looks like a lot more green with the pitchers and hitters. Good time to load up on the pitchers. Not really.
Yeah. I mean, just it depends which pitchers you like. It depends which pitchers you like. But
you like to take a risk, go for it.
I'm probably in these drafts, it's get your guy territory. If it's pick 110, it's 20 picks above ADP for Nick Lodolo. I'm probably just taking him instead of Mizorowski, instead of Glasnow. I just believe in those guys more. So it's just a tricky pocket because there's not really a good like equivalent hitter side that I really like. There's certain bits and pieces I like on the hitter side, but I wouldn't necessarily say that in general the pitcher side is stronger than the hitter side because there's plenty of guys we don't like on the pitcher side here.
All right. Jeff A says, when you look ahead to these further out pockets and see who's available, do you use that as a guide for earlier rounds?
100%. Yes. That's a big reason why we do these shows, right? Is to kind of give you guys what we think are generally good places to attack certain categories, positions, whatever, because in the early rounds, everyone's good, right? I mean, you can pick holes in the early rounds or whatever, but I think the most important thing is use the middle rounds to kind of identify, because not everyone's good in the middle rounds, right? But they're good enough if you pick the right ones to ascend. So that's exactly why we do this. Analyze the middle rounds, see what you like, what you don't like, adjust your early round strategy accordingly.
Yep. Sean Charge says, if you don't pay up for the top closers before this pocket, which of these guys are you okay with as your RP1? Daniel Palencia.
Honestly, most of them.
Yeah, I'll say I agreed. Everyone before Trevor McGill.
Right. Everyone except to name those out. It's Palencia again. It's Jeff Hoffman. I'm pretty okay with Jeff Hoffman. Pete Fairbanks, as long as he stays healthy, is going to be good. Pagan was really good last year. Certainly has a long leash, I think.
Is Kinley a one or a two for you?
Like, what do you mean, one or two?
Because Kinley's on this list. Is he a one or a two for you?
What does one mean?
A RP1 or an RP2?
Preferably RP2.
So, yeah, so I wanted to add him to the list because he's right next to McGill there. So Palencia.
But I like him more than McGill.
Yes. 100%. All right. Smokey Joe says, don't like most of the starting pitchers at this range. Either they are old, injury prone, or rookie pitchers that are too pricey. Name one old, injury prone, and one rookie that you guys like at this value. Well, I said Zach Wheeler. What do you got?
An old, injury prone guy?
An old or old slash injury. So either one that you like in this range. Like Sonny Gray, I guess, counts, but.
Yeah, I go Sonny Gray, but you already mentioned him. Trying to pick a name that we haven't talked about yet. Like, I don't even like Glasnow if he stays healthy. Look at his projection, 380 ERA, 120 whip, and the skills weren't good for Glasnow last year. So, nope. At risk of mentioning the same guy too often, Sonny Gray.
Well, if we don't like the range, there's only so many guys to mention.
Yeah, I'm not just going to make something up to name a new guy, I guess.
Yep. What name one rookie that you'd be interested in this range?
Or young player,
I should say. Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to find someone other than Jacob Marcy, but I just love Jacob.
No, hitters. Younger pitcher.
Younger pitcher. Emmett Sheehan. Yeah.
To be different if his back is fine, I'll say Cam Schlittler.
Yeah, that's – yeah. I like Schlittler more than Burns, Mizorowski, et cetera.
Yep, agreed. Aaron Giff says, Yelich looks undervalued to me. Will he get outfield eligibility this year, or do I need to accept him at UTIL the whole year? No, in season and in NFBC, it's 10 games, folks. Remember that.
Yeah, what did Fish think about that? You think he – gets 10 games?
I think 10 games he might get, but it might take a while. So I think you're going to be playing UTIL for a bit. Like they're going to try to lessen it. Like basically, they're going to need an injury, I think, for him to go to the outfield.
If you're fine having Yelich at utility, the projection versus the where he's going and what Christian Yelich gives to you is pretty damn good. And I know you're going to have to battle with some type of IL stint with the back, but I think that's a headache worth fighting at pick 131 for Yelich. I don't have him very much, but I just think he's, dude, 100 RBI last year, 88 runs, 29 home runs, hit .264, 16 steals, 644 plate appearances. That's, and he's going at 130. It's a really good call out by Aaron. I haven't talked about Yelich much, but I really like that.
No, the skills are great. It's just something about, I think, the util only thing that scares a lot of us off. It probably shouldn't, but I think that's the biggest factor.
Yeah, I agree.
Because skills are great. SMMS79 says, I fall back on Yandy Diaz a lot because of the average. I know projections account for park factors, and he looks fine in the power department, but do you think there's an upside at pick 125?
I do. Yeah, we've actually, on this sheet, he's 136 in these 12-teamers in February, so... the park's probably going to hurt, right? Going back to the trop, but I think I buy this projection of a 285 batting average with 20 homers. And This is a guy who's kind of on an island at the position at first base. Like, the only first baseman on this list going above Yandy Diaz is Michael Busch, going at 111. And I don't know when the next first baseman gets taken. I've taken a bunch of Yandy Diaz because not only is he, there's not many good first base options at this point in the draft, but he's also a batting average guy who will not hurt you in power. And I think that's really important, as well as runs and RBI.
Yep. I took him in the auction last night. So got me some.
You did. In my life. What'd you get him for?
I want to say it was like 12, 13 bucks. I think I could be wrong. I can't even remember right now. It was like a buck or two below AAV.
Nice.
So whatever that was. Adam Seven, the pizza man, says, what if any players in the, well, we're not there yet, Adam. We will get to that next week. He's talking about the 200 to 250 range of ADP. So we'll get to that.
Which ones would we take before this range?
Yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there.
A couple weeks.
We'll get there.
Franchise says, which one of the 100? No, we're not going there. Yep. that sums us up for the night.
Sums it up. Bubba just...
yep.
Hey, we love filters. Our fine Patreon subscribers.
My filter's on tonight, boy. I've stopped myself a couple times. Yep. We'll wrap her up there.
We'll wrap it up with that. Yep. Actually, let's wrap it up with this. Yes. If we have not offended all of our Discord users yet, I'm fascinated. What's your pocket situation? Where's the keys? Where's the phone? Where's the wallet? Let us know. Just fascinated where everyone does that. That's how I want to end the show tonight.
Yes, the things that we come up with on this show. If you come here just for fantasy, I hope you have a personality as well, because we're going to give you ours full bore the entire time. But yeah, if you guys aren't doing anything Friday night, Ryan is drafting an auction. We're streaming that bad boy. 9 Eastern, 6 Best Coast. Come check us out there. The links will be everywhere if you need to. It's on the Bubba and the Bloom YouTube channel. So go check that out. I'll be hanging out with Ryan, and maybe someone else will be joining us too. I'm not sure yet. That's kind of up in the air, it seems like. But yeah, we'll be there for that. Otherwise, we'll be back with you guys next Tuesday with ADP 150 to 200 coming your direction. The third pocket of ADPs. And other than that, hope you guys have a great weekend. Check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Intric. And until next time, this is episode 322. See ya.